For the sixth time after leaving home 2 weeks ago at that time, I was again fastening my belt, my seat belt, for another takeoff on the Golden Circle route. These airbuses go on their schedule or schedule as regular as clockwork. Only, they often leave at a time when most land buses are making for their terminals for the night's rest. Not so in international aviation. Whether day or night, it doesn't matter. Planes are landing or leaving, pulling from an endless reservoir of time. Time that has no regard for day or night, but is just another abstraction measured and calculated by man to come in or leave on time. Our time was 1 o'clock at night, when our Connie turned full throttle into the wind to take off for Abadan on the Persian Gulf, and from there to make Beirut on time at 7 in the morning. And all the time we were crossing distances without even seeing the barren mountains of South Iran or the green shark-infested waters of the Gulf under us. Needn't see it either. Saw it before, 25 years ago, flying east in a tri-motored Fokker plane at no more than about 100 miles per hour. Then we flew. Now we were transported through the air. Rain or shine, we had to be on time. For us Dutch, you know, the route down under, the route about which I'm speaking, down under us, has become kind of a beaten track from the period that KLM started the Pioneer line to the east in the 20s and early 30s. Yes, those were the times when, why dig it all up again? It was still night when the lights of Abadan came into sight. We planed down and had a drink and a rest at the station's rest orant, full of airline posters and some pictures of the Shah, the lord of the land of sand, and the oil beneath it. Now let's not talk too much about oil, ladies and gentlemen. Oil is an inflammable stuff. Much, though, we need it. Now, flying from Abadan to Beirut brought us first over the estuaries of the rivers Euphrates and Tigris, and the so-called Shat el Arab, the Shat el Arab, where it is reputed once was the ancient paradise on earth. Yes, the paradise. Supposed to have been here. But this is now Iraq. And let's hope this country will realize the importance of keeping up an old reputation. After a few hours of flying further west, sometimes it was a bit bumpy, the sun caught up with us, and it certainly was a sight to see, after having crossed the barren deserts, to take a good look at the snow-covered sierras of the Anti-Lebanon. You know, the Anti-Lebanon Mountains, its green valleys, and the awakening old city of Damascus. We were over Syria now. Syria. Still passing over snow-topped ridges, we soon came over the Lebanon proper and thought of King Solomon and the cedar trees he made so famous, and the thousand wives, and so on, you know? Now, our plane was quickly losing altitude. We were gliding in, so to say. Well, there in the distance, behold, look, under a clear sky was the blue Mediterranean, the oldest sea, as they say, in the world. Boy, seeing this sea, after our hop over the pole, the Pacific, and the huge continent of Asia, almost felt like home. It was 7 o'clock in the morning. A friend of mine fetched me. He was a Frenchman, reared in Lebanon, and he assured me that after the turbulent times some months ago, all was quiet again in the country. I had had very little sleep, but was wide awake to take a good look at the modern and busy Beirut, an oriental town with a European accent, a business town, where plenty of money is made, and just as quickly spent. For there are fine hotels and clubs and beautiful beaches, nice people, along the wide and picturesque bay, a little sophisticated Riviera on the shores of the eastern Mediterranean. The air was clear and the temperature was pleasant, which was a relief after the tropics. The Lebanon, with an area of 3,500 square miles, wedged in between Syria, Jordania, and Israel, has a population of 1.5 million. Mohammedans, as well as Christians of Roman and Greek Catholic faith. Their languages are Arabic and French, while lately also English is spoken, though only in the cities. The monetary unit is the Lebanese pound, the Lebanese pound. Modern traffic is enormous in Beirut, with automobile makes of many, many nations, European as well as American. Drivers are all blowing their horns at the same time, each playing his own melody and rhythm, a cacophony of sounds hardly to be beaten by any fairground. Not so good on your nerves when you feel a bit tired. My friends told me, look here, Beirut is fine, though it has lost a lot of business in the troubled months of last year. But what you ought also to see, or rather ought to see also, is Damascus, one of the oldest cities in the world, known from the time of the Bible as well as by its present status. All right, I should say status. But I said Damascus is Syria. Yes, but it's not very far from here. And perhaps we can run you over there, over the Lebanon, by car in a few hours. You can even ski in the mountains. All very well, I said, but what about my passport, no visa? We shall try to fix that at the border, if you will take the chance. Well, as long as the chances don't mean jail or bang, 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 it's okay with me. So we went, and all went fine on the journey there. Though the snow in the mountains had already started to melt, there still were skiers to be seen here and there. Just imagine, ladies and gentlemen, a small hour's drive from the warm and sunny shore of the Mediterranean brings you right into a center of winter sports, right into the snow. Almost incredible, if you haven't really seen it yourself. After climbing up and riding down the Lebanon, on wheels, I mean, we arrived after 3 hours at Damascus. Entering through a broad avenue with many modern trade exhibition buildings, big new flat structures, and fine shopping centers, as well as the typical open but roof-topped bazaars in Oriental style, much like in Istanbul. The stamp of the Turks and the Ottoman Empire, is still strongly noticeable here. But the big and colorful attraction of Damascus is the presence of at least 100 beautiful and characteristic mosques, the most gorgeous of which is the famous Omeyyada. Omeyyada is written O-M-E-Y-A-D-A. The Omeyyada, 240 feet wide inside, surrounded by an immense courtyard, both covered by the most beautiful Oriental rugs and carpets, on which the Muslims were praying. It was just in the fasting period, before Easter. Were praying, facing in the direction of Mecca. I too went in, on my socks, holding my shoes under my arm, squatting down and listening to the turbaned priest, trying to grasp the meaning from his eloquent gesticulations. In this same Omeyyada, named after the renowned dynasty of the caliphs, I discovered to my surprise the large shrine and tomb of St. John the Evangelist, a grave still here from the times of the Byzantines. Long, long ago, I thought, sunk into deep reflection. When we came out into the street again, I almost forgot to put on my shoes. When I finally had done so, my friends told me, "Now we are going to show you Straight Street." Straight Street. I didn't quite understand at first. But then, when my companion started to tell about St. Paul, it quickly dawned upon me. Straight Street is the street through which St. Paul the Evangelist walked in blindness on his way from Jerusalem to Damascus, where he stayed for 3 days in the house of Judas, until he was told by Ananias, a disciple of Jesus, that from now on he should go out and preach the gospel to the world. Shortly after this meeting with Ananias, St. Paul regained his eyesight. He went to preach in many countries round the Mediterranean, even in Spain, and he is said to have died a martyr's death in the year 64 in Rome. Filled with many impressions of our visit to ancient Damascus, we left rather late at night for Beirut again. I still remember the wonderful sight of Damascus, of part of the city at least, offered with its many lighted houses built against the foothills of the Anti-Lebanon. Really a most enchanting and romantic sight and setting. The road over the mountains was almost deserted, and we were going good speed through the dark, when all of a sudden, about half a dozen big flashlights stopped us in the road. 4 uniformed men, Tommy guns under their arms, approached our car, ordering us to get out, while considerable Arabic speaking went on with our Arab driver. The car was searched from all sides and angles, while we were standing by, thinking all kinds of thoughts, from arrest to being shot at sunrise. But Mohammed, our driver, kept cool as a cucumber, explaining what only he could explain in his language, while we didn't know what it was all about. When we finally were allowed to continue on our way, we asked the $64,000 or $100,000 question, "What was this?" "They are after a gang of opium smugglers, hashish, as it is known here," he said. "And they thought we just might be the boys driving about here as late in the night as this." "You are not only a fine driver," I said, "but also an excellent diplomat. Mohammed, have a drink on me when we get back to Beirut." "Chukran." "Thank you," in Arabic. "Chukran," he replied, shaking his head with a smile. And all of a sudden I realized that a real Arab never has what we call a drink. Next day was the last day of my stay, and it was again crowded with interest and excitement. I was brought to the Lebanon's most interesting cultural attraction, the mammoth ruins of Baalbek. The ruins of Baalbek, B-A-A-L-B-E-K. Another 3-hour ride in a different direction than heretofore. The ruins of Baalbek, which means city of Baal, are called after the ancient Phoenician god Baal and are comprising an area almost 10 times as large as the Acropolis in Athens, dating back 4,000 years. They are a conglomeration of ancient temples built in the honor of Jupiter and Apollo and Venus, enormous structures with many passages, alleys, altars, and many rows of Doric columns, now partly or mostly demolished. The base of it all is of Phoenician origin, while the wondrous and magnificent architecture is Greek, later taken over by the Romans. After them, the temples were viciously destroyed in the times of the Byzantines and the Arabs, who used the temple structures as fortifications against their enemies, to whom also belonged the Crusaders. Although greatly demolished as an entity, Baalbek is still one of the most powerful and impressive sights anyway to be seen in the old world. Very interesting and illustrated literature in explicit or condensed form can be had and bought here on the spot. Even doesn't cost very much. I say again, very interesting and illustrated literature on the subject can be had here in explicit or condensed form, small or larger booklets or folders. Write to Baalbek if you're interested and ask for it. You will not regret this tip. Came the last evening in Beirut. My plane was scheduled to leave at 4 in the morning, so there was all the time for a visit to a nightclub. Yeah, you've got to try everything once, you know. It was called La Casbah. Very oriental, La Casbah. And the best club in town. Prices were accordingly. But the floor show was good, and typical too. The first offering was a real danse de ventre, as they say in French, an oriental belly dance. Yes, a belly dance. A sensuous abdominal affair of the highest acrobatic virtuosity. A copper-colored dusky beauty, rather decently bikinied, came in swaying dark green muslin and danced to the exciting rhythm of a very oriental orchestra. The body turned, twisted, swayed, swung, shimmied and shook on the darkly lighted carpet-covered floor until the dancer, finally sliding to the floor, finished in a rhapsody of vibrations while the exotic orchestra was bringing the spectacle to a pitch and a sudden end. Frantic applause. Gracefully, the dancer stood up, thanking the audience, and disappeared light of foot into the darkness. Good show for a show. I wonder what a Pasha or a real Maharaja would have said to this performance, for they are the ones in the real know-how. Then, winding up, came a Spanish show by the group headed by Rafael de Cordoba. That's his real name. Headed by Rafael de Cordoba of Spain. They were, as a matter of fact, entirely different in presentation and appeal, dancing Andalusian dances and La Jota Aragonesa to the strains of the characteristic music of Spain. As a Hispanophile, as I am a Hispanophile, my olés and olé and my clapping were not off the air while this dexterous Iberic group was on the stage. Their classic art warmed my heart and made my hands hurt from spontaneous applause until it was all over. I talked long into the night in Castellano to Rafael de Cordoba and his bailarinas until it was 3 o'clock in the morning and time again to fly again to be for Easter in Rome. So bye-bye, Beirut.